Hello and welcome to another brand new edition of The Current Account. We have with us today Mr. P.N. Vasudevan to take us through the second part of our chat in his journey as a promoter of Equitas Small Finance Bank. In this episode, he chalks out the way ahead for the bank and what it would take for the bank to get to where it is over a period of time. Listen in. Now that you've set sight to become a universal bank, of course you are still to approach the regulator regarding this and so on, but internally, is there anything that you're beginning to sort of fine-tune, you're beginning to foresee that you would require to do as a universal bank and hence start channelizing towards it?
See, universal bank, the difference would be on a few factors. Mm-hmm. One is that from a capital adequacy, from 15, it will go down to 9. Mm-hmm. But then we don't have to provide capital for market risk and operation risk today as a SOB. But as a universal bank, you have to provide capital against that. Mm-hmm. So there's some amount of capability that needs to be built in the bank to assess the market capital required for these two risks. So already our risk team is on the job. So we are creating those skill sets in the bank. How do we calculate the capital required for those two risks? So already that work is going on, and so we are fairly geared on that side. Second thing is that our priority sector loans from 75% will drop down to 40%, and which means that it will allow me the space to do some more retail loans, which may not be priority sector loans. So those retail loans could typically be like car loans, personal loans, or a two-wheeler, or a credit card. Those are the kind of typical individual retail loans, which may not mostly qualify for PSL. Today, we are not in any of that space, because I need 75% PSL, which means I need 88% PSL to be on the safe side. I don't want to be at the edge. And so we are completely off consumer loans. We are only into commercial lending space. But now what we are doing is we are looking at creating and launching products in the consumer space, so that over the next 6 months, 12 months, some of these products will see the light of the day. And then maybe somewhere down the line, let's say 12 months from today or X number of months from today, if I do become a universal bank, then I will have some of these products available, and then we can start scaling them up from that point in time onwards. So we are getting ready from the lending side, trying to just gear up the organization's capability on a few consumer products which may not qualify for PSL.
On the people side, are you doing anything a little different, or the current setup and structure?
No, on the people side, absolutely, I don't see any reason to do anything at all. We are at the senior management, though, we are completely well-staffed and well-manned, and we have a good set of management team. And the universal bank and small finance bank, I don't see any difference from any other issue. Either priority sector, which gives you some scope for consumer loans, the capital adequacy, which barrier to gear up to provide capital for market and operation risk. Basically, these are the two main differences. But in terms of compliance, in terms of rest of the risk management, in terms of operations, actually, we don't see any difference at all between us and the universal bank. So already we are fairly well geared on all
ECL,
other things.
Do you expect that to sort of, the cutoff date for banks to banks and other stakeholders to give their feedback was yesterday? You would have also made your representations to the RBI. Because of the new provision norms that might come in by FY25, let's say, would that also call for a little bit of fine-tuning of your financials, of the way you're looking at providing for your assets?
See, ECL is something that we have been doing for quite a few years now in Equitas, because our holding company was an NBOC.
Okay.
And the holding company had to provide a consolidated financials of the holdco and the bank. And the holdco cannot consolidate Ind AS of the holdco and IRAC norms of the bank. That's not possible.
Yes.
So already the bank, while we prepare our the regular accounting for the bank from an RBI perspective, we were also preparing the Ind AS and the ECL format of accounting for the bank and submitting to the holdco for consolidation. So already the bank is completely geared on ECL framework and the Ind AS framework.
What is the differential, sir, in terms of your NPA numbers from an ECL perspective and from an IRAC perspective?
See, the NPA, there will be no change, because both are talking of 90 plus, so there is no change as far as the percentage of NPA is concerned. Provisions will change, because in under IRAC norms of RBI, you provide only for NPA, and then you have some standard asset provisioning, which is a flat provisioning across different product categories. But under ECL, you have to actually go and do your, you know, LGD and PD of your past transactions. So you have to do a 5-year, 7-year, 8-year, 10-year regression analysis of your portfolio performance and find out typically how many proposals, how many contracts tend to go bad. And once they go bad, what's the kind of losses you generally incur? And using that, you have to project for your portfolio going into the future and then make provision on that basis. Slightly, the difference is largely on the way that you provide. But anyway, we are geared.
Would that prompt you to look at a fundraise at this juncture?
No.
Or possibly a year from now when we have more clarity on the regulations?
Whatever we have seen so far, the provision that we incur on our IRAC or on our ECL, generally the difference is not much. Because we have been, as I mentioned, we have been preparing ECL you know, accounting also for all this last 6 years. We have been doing that also. And in our case, we don't see much of a difference. There are other few accounting differences and all that. So all put together, at the bottom part of it, we don't see much of a difference as far as we are concerned. And so I don't think that if ECL becomes a norm tomorrow, I don't think we'll need to raise capital and have an extra high quantity of provisioning hitting the bank. It is not likely to arise.
On the operation side, one of the factors that sort of helped you significantly when you were transitioning from MFI to SFB was that at the time when you started, rate of interest were a little high, but over the course of period, rate of interest did melt down significantly. Now that cycle is reversing again, how do you see this pan out for your profitability and for your earnings? And do you envisage that once again we will see SFBs giving out interest at 9%, 10%? Already we have Unity SFB at 10%. It has its compulsions, that's a different thing. But do you see high interest rates coming from SFBs once again and from Equitas in specific?
Now we are in a rising interest rate scenario. General expectation is that there will be almost one more round of increases, more or less taken as granted. Another round of increase is something that people are beginning to start predicting now.
Right.
Which means that you are going to look at an increasing interest rate scenario for another 3 months, maybe another 6 months also. Hopefully before the interest rate starts plateauing, if not reducing, at least plateauing out. So we are clearly in an interest rate upcycle scenario now. Over the last year and a half, the total increase in the repo rate from RBI is around 2.25%. And some of the banks, the larger banks, the difference between their current deposit rate and the 1.5 to 2 year back deposit rate, that difference is almost like 1.5 to 2%. Whereas in our case, it's around 1.5. So we just try to moderate our increase a little bit to try and keep control over our cost of funds. But we also been raising it. And we will have to raise again if the scenario moves up further. So we'll also have to do that. But on the lending side, we do have some amount of advantage because most of the segments that we lend to, mostly NTC customers, that is the new to credit customers. And so we do have some level of ability to pass on our cost of funds increase to the borrowers. Second thing is that we are also growing. The increase in percentage growth in income will be always higher than the percentage growth in cost, which means that somewhere the bank is becoming more and more efficient. And so it's a combination of the bank becoming more efficient. A part of that efficiency can be passed on to the borrowers by not passing on the entire increase in cost to the borrowers. So part of the increase we'll pass on, part of the increase we'll absorb and but be able to adjust.
But the bank hasn't come to that stage yet. This is more like a futuristic thing.
That's right. So we believe that through a partial pass-through of the cost and a partial absorption of the cost, we can still manage the spreads and bottom line of the bank.
You could call out Vasu for anything, but one thing he's a stickler of is regulations and adhering to regulations. I think in today's day and age, this is not a tag which everybody would have earned. So as a person who started out career in an NBFC, who was to head a bank and now you're heading a bank, what were the few things that ingrained in you that you decided from day one that no, regulations are something I cannot bypass at any cost? I mean, it's also like a reputational risk for any banker.
We may make mistakes on anything which is acceptable and pardonable, so long as it's a genuine mistake or an honest mistake. But, you know, sidestepping or undercutting a regulatory framework is not a mistake. It's something that you do consciously, and so it will be completely unpardonable. totally unpardonable. So we have been very clear in Equitas, we may be a small bank, we are not comparable to the large banks in terms of size. I mean, there are banks at 100 times my size. So I am not going to be able to compare with them on size, on scale, on reputation, on the brand recall. I am not going to be able to compare with any of those guys. My number is 118. I am bank number 118 in India. So there are 117 banks ahead of me who have been there before me. But there is one thing on which I can stand eye to eye or shoulder to shoulder and maybe even go above any other bank in terms of our reputation, in terms of our compliance, in terms of our culture. And that is one thing where we believe that we can be, you know, head and shoulder over anybody else. And that is one area where we have been very conscious right from the beginning. You know, in cricket, when the umpire calls the decision, he always gives the benefit of doubt to the batsman and not to the bowler. Because the bowler gets one more chance to bowl, but the batsman is gone. So, benefit of doubt always goes to the batsman. So, similarly in Equitas, the internal philosophy is that the benefit of doubt goes to the regulator and not to the bank. Even if it's a cost to the bank, we will not do it. We will be in the middle and not at the edge of the competition. And that's something that we are very, very clear about. This is not an empty philosophy or it's not an empty rhetoric that we talk about, but we can actually give multiple instances where we have actually done this. Even though we see a business opportunity and even though we see some other bank probably doing it, we say that no, in our view, this is not looking crystal clear. So we can't do it. But then we don't sit back. We talk to RBI, we write to RBI. And if at all we get a clarification from RBI that this is okay, then we'll jump in and do it ourselves. But if either RBI says no, then we just stay where we are. We don't do it. So there are multiple instances where actually we give up what looks like an opportunity. I'm not saying it is, because if it's a regulatorily grey or regulatorily banned, it's not an opportunity at all. It doesn't exist. Absolutely. But what looks like an opportunity, we are quite comfortable giving it up.
And this was the decision you took from day one that you set foot in there on your own in the industry.
Absolutely. And we are very closely in touch with all the people in RBI at all levels. And we keep informing them. For example, I'll just give you one small example. You know, about 6 to 9 months back, RBI had come and levied penalty on about half a dozen banks on different areas. So when that happened, our risk and compliance team, they did one special thematic audit on all those areas where other banks were penalized. We did one assessment of ourselves. Where do we stand?
And this is a voluntary one.
This is voluntary. We just did it on our own. Then when we did that analysis, we figured out that in most of the areas, actually, we are very comfortable. We are fully compliant and there is no cause for concern. But in a couple of areas, we were also actually, you know, weak. On the same point, only some other bank was penalized. I was also weak. I was not penalized only because RBI's inspection had not happened to me at that point in time. But otherwise, I was also actually, you know, having a gap. What we did, our risk and compliance, they prepared a note based on this inspection saying where we are comfortable, where we are not actually right or where there's a gap. And then what are we going to do to fill up that gap? What timeline by which we'll fill up that gap? They prepared that note. Then my instruction to my CCO and my CRO was, don't show me that note. Send it directly to RBI. Don't show it to me first. Because if you show it to me, you know, I'm the boss. Then I may always say, hey, guys, don't report all this. They are dilute it like this, modify it like this. I mean, I know that I won't do it. But the guy sitting in my chair the next time around may do it. As an internal process, it should not come to me. It should go directly to RBI, only mark to me for me to act on that gap. So that's what we did. From then on till now, we have been sending a monthly report to RBI on the gap filling up, what's the progress on each of those gaps and commitments on timelines.
So, what was the feedback from the regulator? Because you did it through Moto.
See, generally, people are happy. You know, see, the point is that a regulator also is always concerned about banks. They're always concerned because how much ever you have your inspections on-site, off-site inspections, how much ever reports they collect from the banks and analyze it remotely, at the end of the day, there's still a concern whether something unseen or unknown is happening wrong in any bank, which can cause issue, right? There's always a concern of a regulator. And also regulators, as well as we know that nobody can be perfect. We also know, even RBI also knows that no bank can be perfect. Then where will RBI ever get a comfort on the banks? The only way that we can give a comfort to our regulators is to say that I know I will never be perfect. I know I'll always have a gap. I know I'll always be making mistakes. I know I'll always have some non-compliance issues. But the only way I can give comfort to you as my regulator is that I will myself keep on keeping you informed of everything which is happening wrong in the bank. I'll myself keep informing you with a commitment to improve timeline. So if that comfort we can give, that removes a lot of the stress and concern from a regulatory perspective. And our feedback also is that generally, you know, we enjoy some good level of comfort from the regulators because of this approach, that they know that if something is going wrong in Equitas, we will ourselves be the first to go and inform them.
As somebody who's seen a lot of challenges when it comes to transition, how are you equipping yourself to handle the next level of transition? Because you've not taken a step back because of the pain that it can cause to the system and to your institution at this juncture. So how is it that you're equipping yourself to handle what is to come in the future? And this, I would like an answer more from a thought process perspective rather than what's actually happening on ground.
Long-term future plans and all that, it has multiple elements in it. There's a liability strategy element, there's an asset strategy element, there's a control risk strategy element. Lot of elements of strategy which makes up your future strategy for any organization and definitely for the bank. And we have our plans and so many things we keep discussing, 3-year plan, 5-year plan, a little longer term plan, all that is happening all the time. It keeps happening all the time. But beyond all of that, what we believe is that the long-term strategy of Equitas, the fundamental bedrock on which we are building our long-term strategy for Equitas is that we shall clearly define a path which is the best in the interest of all the stakeholders and then stick to that and then pursue that relentlessly till we keep reaching our goals and not get swayed by the multiple number of suggestions, advisors that will keep pouring in from different people all the time. So for example, we're in the demonetization times. We are 53% unsecured, which was our microfinance, and 48 was secured. We had a plan to keep gradually bringing it down anyway, but we wanted to accelerate it given the external macro kind of factors and the impact it was creating on our unsecured book. We want to accelerate the diversification process faster than our original plan, which we put into motion. And we said that in 3 years, we'll bring it down to 1/3. And then in another 2 years, we shall bring it down to 1/5. But then it was giving us a short-term pain, because when you are winding down a little faster, then obviously there's an impact on P&L, bottom line and all that. That had an effect on some of our stakeholders. But we know that it's in the long-term benefit of all the stakeholders.
Correct.
Ultimately. So we went through short-term pain for a couple of years and before we came out and we were much better off. You know, after the demonetization, our ROA went down to 0.3% and it took us 9 quarters to reach a 2% level, return on assets. But because of that faster winding down of our unsecured book and all that, and now we are so much more stable because of that short-term pain we took in those years, when Corona happened, the minimum ROA it went down to was 1.1. So we never went down to the 0.3 level. The minimum itself was only 1.1. And from there to come back to the 2% plus level took us only 3 quarters, again 9 quarters. A lot of people were telling us at that time that why do you want to rush like this, and show a better profitability if you do it more slowly and all that. If I had done that during Corona, I would again have a bad impact and I would have gone really under and it will take you much longer time to come back. But we have been able to do it much faster. I think from a long-term business perspective, while all the other elements of strategy are always something that every bank will have and we will also continue to have, but the philosophy is that we will never hesitate to take a short-term pain if it means that it will lead to a long-term benefit for all stakeholders.
And that was the last of the two-part series that we promised with Mr. Vasudevan. Do let us know if you enjoyed it. We will be back soon with an equally interesting chat. Signing off for now is your host for this edition of Current Account, Hamsini Karthik.